before buying technology and putting it in place, you have to invest yourself in it to ensure that it's going to be successful. And you do that not just for the sake of yourself, but for the sake of your team. Because everything that you do for your team and everything that you do to improve your team's life, like moving just obstacles, I just always imagine, you know, doing this, moving obstacles. That makes their lives better. And that means that they're more excited to do their job every day, which ultimately pays off for you in the end.
Welcome to the Strategy with Jason podcast. Tune in for everything you need to know to stay in the know regarding the automotive industry. Here's your host, Jason Harris.
Hey, what's going on? Podcast Nation, is Jason Harris here, and thank you for joining me on another episode of Strategy with Jason. Today, I have a very special guest, a very special friend of mine that I've been looking forward to talking to all week long.
Me too.
Ray, what's going on? How are you doing?
All's good. I'm happy to be here, and I'm super excited just to get to spend time talking with you, Jason. And I wore my orange just for you. It's the closest I've got.
Oh, man, that's the closest you got. You know what? That is the one thing about orange. You know, there's 50,000 different shades.
Yes, exactly.
You know how hard it is? You know, people go, wow, Jason, you have a lot of orange. I'm like, you don't understand the time it takes to make that kind of dedication. There's 1,000 different variations of orange out there, and I'm always trying to find the right orange. Anyways, I digress.
Mine's more of a winter orange, I think, that I have on today. But hey, you know, it's all I've got. I was trying to pay homage to you, so.
Thank you. Hey, Ray, I'm so glad that you get to come do this. It's so funny. When I was thinking about it, like, we've been friends for a long time. We've never done a podcast together. And I'm like, what?
I know.
We got to do this. So, and I love the topic today. Everyone watching, listening right now, we're gonna dive super deep into sales leadership, you know, which is one of my favorite topics. And I know, Ray, it's one of your favorite topics as well. So I'm excited to get into it. But I love kicking off these podcasts, Ray, with a little origin story, because hey, I'm just fascinated, you know, because I don't think anybody just wakes up one day and goes, hey, I'm going to spend the better part of my life in the automotive industry.
Right.
So, Ray, let's start there. How did you get started in this crazy little world we call the automotive industry?
So I got into it a very long time ago at a very young age. I started selling cars for the John Eagle dealership group back in Dallas, Texas, where I grew up. And his dad was actually leading the dealership group back then. That's how long ago it was. And I was just going to do it until I figured out what I wanted to do. You know, it was something that I knew I loved cars. I could sell anything. And I knew I'd figure out my way, you know, once I did it. And then, as with many people you talk to about automotive and how they got into it, it gets in your blood and you get stuck. And that's all I've ever done in the last, you know, 30 plus years.
You know what it is. I tried to get out of the automotive industry for like 3.5 weeks, some like dark month in 2015. And it only lasted about 3.5 weeks. And I was just like that episode from The Godfather. I just looked right back in, right? You know, but it does, it gets in your blood, you know, and it's, you know, and that's a heck of a dealership to be cutting your teeth on, man. I'm sure you got some fish stories that you can tell, I'm going to get some out of it, but you know, well, let's kick this off with our sales leadership, because I know this is a topic that we're both very, very passionate about. And honestly, Rick, I mean, talk about a timely topic too. You know,
totally
going on with the industry right now. And you know, everyone's kind of getting back to basics. You know, we're going to get back to basics. You know, it's not enough that we just come in and flip the lights on and have the level of profitability that we've had, you know, in the past few years. Now we gotta work at it. And I think what you're seeing, and I'm sure you're seeing the same thing, I know I'm seeing, is you're seeing those leaderships, those real operators, you know, that cream kind of rise to the top scenario.
Yeah.
So like, I want to start off there actually with you, Ray. I want to ask, that's my first question of you. When you think of a sales leader,
yes,
what do you picture? How do you picture a sales leader?
So that's a great question. And there's a big difference in a sales leader or a sales manager, you know, I think, and it's so cliche to say, but it's true. I think, you know, in the automobile industry, the retail side, and then outside of it, you know, there's a difference in getting involved in your staff's success, helping them succeed, fostering success, rolling up your sleeves, shoulder to shoulder with them, and helping them be the best that they can be, and coaching them through the experiences that they're having, you know, on either the showroom floor or in the field, talking to dealers, you know, through a vendor side. I mean, there's a lot that that if you're a person who's been promoted into a sales leadership role, you should have experienced a lot, and you've been through a lot of growth to get there, right? And so if you take the time to really transfer that knowledge and share that knowledge with the folks that are on your team, then they're going to be better for that, right? And I think so many folks, particularly in this industry, get either promoted without any skills or training, and they don't seek it out on their own. But also I don't know how to say this without it just sounding bad, but it's true. Yeah. There's so many people in leadership roles that try to keep folks beneath them with a lack of knowledge so that they stay there, right? And they don't become competition to them. I mean, I think that all goes back to like the liner closer setup in dealerships, right? If you take a look at that scenario and that setup and structure, you don't see that much anymore, thankfully, because I don't think it really fostered growth in people very much, right? Mm-hmm. And folks would get, promoted, or I'm sorry, folks would get, sort of held down. And then those that did get promoted were very strict in not sharing or fostering any knowledge or growth for the people that were on their teams. And I think
that's typically what you see in a manager's mentality versus kind of that leadership's mentality. Yeah. When we think of, and I love the fact that you brought up, actually, I'm going to just go down one rabbit hole, because I love the fact that you brought up, how we're not trained. And right, I'm going to tell you, this is just my personal experience. Let's see. When I became a floor manager, I would have been 20.
Yeah.
Right. So I was 20 years old and I got promoted to a floor manager, which this was a very large GM dealership, which meant that I was responsible for 5 sales guys.
Right.
That's how big. There was, all together, roughly almost 60 sales guys, 50, 60 sales guys, somewhere in between there, right? Yeah. And they were divided up among the floor managers, and then up above was the general sales managers, and then the GM, and so on and so forth, right? And at 20 years old, all of a sudden, I had a lead, 5 people that were all within easily 10, 15 years older than myself.
Yeah. Right?
And it was like someone tossing the keys to a manual transmission car and telling you need to go on a road trip across the country.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's what it was. I mean, I had no clue what the heck I was doing, but that's how it worked. And I think it still works sometimes at some dealerships like that.
It does. I think the same thing happened to me, Jason, in that, 21, 22 years old, or, further beyond that in my career, being in a leadership role, managing men, in Texas. I'm a woman, 50, 60 year old men, and in my early 20s. And there was a lot of initial, who are you? What are you going to teach me? Who do you think you are, kind of thing? And it took a lot of effort, but you win them over. And then ultimately they're doing better and you're all doing better. And it becomes a success story in the end, 9 out of 10 times, I would say. I mean, if it didn't, then we, would have discussions and then separate. But I always tried to just put that aside, right? The fact that they didn't want to work for a kid in their mind, especially a girl kid, right? And so you just got to put that aside. And I think one of the things, going back to your initial question about sales leadership, is there's a compassion factor that is huge, right? In that versus a manager or a boss, if you will. I think you care about people and you care about them and want to help them succeed. There's that empathy and that care. Forget the fact that if the better they do, the better you do. I mean, that's a byproduct, right? But if that's your motivator, then it's not going to work. If your motivator is that I really care about these people, I want to figure out what makes them tick and help them navigate the way to success, then, it's a good formula, right?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, I was a young punk kid. All right. I every single person that I was now overseeing had many, many years more experience than I did. And there was, and honestly, Ray, there was no way I was ever going to manage this group of men. Right. Like, I was not, but I did find, because I couldn't manage, I wasn't going to manage their efforts. Like, all right. I'm going over to Bob. Bob's 62 years old, by the way. Right. Bob, you haven't hit your phone call follow-up quota today. I'm going to need you. And he's just going to look at me and just give me, Bob spent a stitch in, you know, a 10-year run in the pen for doing some drugs. No, thank me for all I know, right? Like, but anyways, what I was good at, and it just kind of, it was just totally by accident. I was really good at numbers. All right. So I was really good at calculating probability and kind of showing them based on what their current effort. I was a big baseball fan too. So like, I love numbers. I love keeping track of scores and at bats and RBIs and just so sales. I was like, well, this is just a combination of just those exact same stats. Right. Mm-hmm. And as I was presenting and showing them their stats, I watched their ego start to kick in and say, well, no. I'm better than Bob. Are you kidding me? And exactly. It naturally happened for me that way. I got lucky and it naturally happened. But to your point, I don't think that's the case for many, right?
Yeah, well, it's not. And you know, you make a great point in that I always say validation replaces negotiation. I mean, I've said that. And it does it in many ways, right? Like not just in selling a car. If you show them the info that you're talking about, obviously you don't have to negotiate as hard because it validates it. But you do that with people too. And you show them how they can achieve, you show them a path to where they need to be, and then you show them everybody else's performance. And that's when their eyes are opened. I mean, they're going, oh, like you said, oh, wow, I'm way better than him. Why is he outperforming me? And then it starts to open, the minds and the gears start going. And then the conversations get easier, right, as a leader. But
you're so right. Look, the moment I started leading their efforts versus managing their activities. But I got lucky. No one was there to show me how to do it. So, I still watch a lot of people, but okay. So I want to get, we'll start really kind of going to people, cause I know you're kind of touching on this, a little bit as we're kind of progressing in, but so let's talk about people. And, I'm gonna give you a little comment and I want to get your thoughts on this. Sure. All right. For me as a sales leader, I had to learn really quick that I did not have to like every single person I worked with.
That's true. Yeah.
So ultimately,
it's a hard concept to get through first, but once you do, it's 100% true.
Right. So how do you go from, leading yourself to now leading people and the different dynamics those people are? What's some of the best advice you can give for that?
Well, I think there's an old saying that is true. And it's that, the best thing about managing people is people. And the worst thing about managing people is people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's 100% true. And I think I love people. So fortunately, I see, sometimes what's causing them to be that way. I can dig in and figure it out and kind of start to touch on. If you get people to open up, sometimes they feel like they can trust you. And then they'll start to put that hard shell down a little bit. It's something that, regardless of how you feel about a person, because you can't show favoritism either, right? You can't treat someone worse or better. You just have to work with, here's the role. Here are the expectations of the role. No one person is more important than what we're all trying to accomplish, right? So when you look at it that way and you help ensure that that's the way that everybody else understands that you're leading them, and then just being able and willing to help them just like you would help the person that is the easiest to work with, and spending equal amount of time with them and giving some positive feedback about maybe another way that some things could be handled, once you've earned that trust a little bit, and encouraging them to maybe look at different perspectives about things. I think you don't always win, right, Jason? I mean, you and I both know that. You can't always turn everyone. And if you've given it your best effort and it doesn't happen, then you've done all you can. But usually if you keep at it and you go about it, with the right mindset, and I can't be defensive, then, you can turn things around.
No, look, you're absolutely right. And I know what you're kind of alluding to is this mystical thing called emotional intelligence.
Yes.
And right. I'm going to be straight up and honest with you. I did not have an overly high EQ. All right. I came from a dealership and a culture. I know we're going to talk into culture because we're going to get into that. But I came from a place where it was suck it up, buttercup, check your shit at the door. All right. And just, shut up and get back to work.
Yes. Right?
In fact, I remember I had a lady that worked for me for a while, super nice lady, for one year for Christmas crocheted me this beautiful pillow, and it said, shut the up and get back to work. And
the motto around there.
And of course, everyone thought it was funny. I thought it was cute. But then I actually got thinking about it. I'm like, wow, I actually do say that so often.
Wow. That
someone decided to go crochet it into a pillow. And that was kind of my aha moment of, you know what, maybe I'm doing this wrong. And, you know, it wasn't until about, I would say, 2010 to 2011 that I really started to figure out, like, you know, I didn't just have to yell at people and force them to do stuff. But let's dive a little bit into emotional intelligence and how you feel like that can play out, you know, and help in fostering, you know, sure, in our sales industry.
Well, really quickly, though, I mean, was that the only example that you had seen, right? So you were mirroring kind of what you had been brought up in, if you will, right?
You're actually right, you know, because it was that's what I saw. You know, that's that, as far as I knew, that's how you rent a dealership.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. That's how,
and that's how many are run still to this day. I mean, with more HR, you know, checks and balances in there. But I started pre-HR, and boy, was it colorful. But, you know, I think we used to call it getting our hair parted, right? When someone, you know, one of the managers would scream at you and you just get your, you know. But it was definitely not the most encouraging environment. It was definitely not, you know, the most positive. It was just, you know, you got work like a dog. And I remember the dealers, I mean, at that same group that I mentioned earlier, when I first started there, if you were the last one on the board, regardless of how many cars you sold, I mean, it could have been 20, it didn't matter. But if you were the last one on the board, every month you got fired. And so imagine the culture that that fostered, right? Everybody
else. I was same dealership. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and so that's just, that's the kind of place where I loved so many things about it. But at the same time, I knew that that's not how I wanted to, if I ever had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I just knew that's not how I wanted to lead or how I wanted to run, you know, my store ultimately that I ended up running, or to run any team that I ever had the opportunity to run.
Well, no, look, and I found, look, I got better. I'm going to admit, I totally got better. I kind of had this aha moment, you know, kind of looked at myself in the mirror. I'm like, is this
the pillow hit you in the face, right?
Pillow kind of hit me in the face. It was kind of like, is this how I really kind of want to be known as, you know, yeah. And my ultimate goal was ultimately become an owner. And I did actually very shortly after that. But it was like, I had to kind of have a moment with myself and say, and you know, here's the other thing. It also caused me a lot of stress. By the way, leading people that way is a very stressful way to lead lead people. And I found that as I kind of, you know, I could connect people from an intelligence perspective, meaning like, hey, look, I understand you want to get out of your mom's basement and you want to buy a brand new Ski-Doo. All right. Well, let me map out every activity and effort you're going to need to actually get this. I know you're going to want to pay for your kids' college. Let me map this out for you and show you exactly how many cars ultimately you're going to need to, like that. I was good. That's what I was good at. But then the emotional side, but as I actually realized, I found that my team performed better. I performed better. It was kind of like this untapped, like, turbo boost thing. I didn't even necessarily understand, but it was now I was understanding, you know, and being more empathetic to, you know, to why people and people were committing. Anyways, I digress.
It's true what you're talking about. I mean, you're not going off on a tangent. You're talking about something that's very real. It's everybody starts to feel the energy, right? And that's contagious. Yes,
that's what it is.
And then it becomes something bigger than just you or themselves, right? And so everyone kind of gets involved and that just explodes. And it's inexplainable a lot of times how that happens, or even specifically why it happens, but it does in the right culture. You're 100% right.
Well, you know what? The next topic I kind of want to get into, which is just perfect expansion off of going into people. I want to go into the next big P, which is process.
Yes.
Right? And Ray, I actually posted something recently about this, and a few weeks ago, I was kind of on the road. I was hitting up some good friends of mine, seeing a few dealers and hanging out a little bit, and was doing a little bit kind of mentoring on a few people. Right. And I got into a dealership where I was waiting for a meeting to get over so that my meeting could start. And I watched this salesperson and customer who looked like they just finished negotiating a deal, but as a part of the deal, the customer wanted to get a lift kit and some new tires. And there was no process for this. In fact, I mean, I just watching the parts department, the way that they treated the salesperson, the way they were treating the customer getting frustrated because they weren't listening to what he really wanted and they were quoting the wrong thing and going back and the prices were all over the place. And then the guy was like, oh, whoops, I said the wrong thing. And it was just like, you could tell there was no process. I mean, this guy was ready to cancel this deal. Now, luckily, the salesperson was amazing, was able to kind of calm and situate it. But it was, I watched this 47-minute fully broken or just a total lack of a process almost destroy an entire customer's experience.
And the car deal as well. I mean, the guy wants to purchase this car and he's going to have to start all over. It's not enticing either. It's because the process is so bad. And it can't just stop at process either though, Jason. I mean, you can put a process in place, but you have to train people on it and you have to reinforce that training on it too.
Otherwise, therefore it has to be written, right? Right. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. You got to document it, train on it, and then review it and revise it as needed all the time.
That's a great point. I mean, you know, the process, I'm with you on this because I do kind of feel like process is kind of like this organic organism where it's kind of constantly always evolving. You know, I've told people many, many times, like whatever process we put in place right now, there'll be 13 variations of this by the time we're done with it. You know, because to your point, like a good process, here's the other thing, Ray, I got to be totally honest with you. I am still surprised today how many dealerships I walk into and sit down with upper management or even ownership.
Yeah.
Find a total lack of documentation when it comes to the process. You know where the process exists, Ray?
Up that's what's head, exactly.
Up in their heads. So,
well, and it might be different depending on the day that you ask them too. I mean, that's the sad part, right? On Monday the process is this, on Friday the process is this. Yeah.
You've been in the same dealership.
It's not scalable or functional or anything like that. Yes, I've worked with those same dealers. No, I'm just kidding. And I think there's so many moving parts in a dealership that I would never, and having been a GM myself, I would never be disparaging to a dealership. I think there's a lot of trust put in middle management a lot of times that this stuff will get done and there's no checks and balances to ensure it gets done because there's so many moving parts and there's so much going on in a dealership that it falls through the cracks. And that's, I think, where I put my focus and it just didn't happen because you have to be able, when something breaks down, you have to be able to say, okay, what was the process and where did it fail? Yes. Otherwise, you can never correct the problem. You can't ensure that it doesn't happen again, right? Because when you say, where did it fail? Then what do we need to do to make sure it doesn't happen again, right? That's the final piece to it.
Well, and you know what? I think that's a perfect segue kind of our next topic because now we look at the technology.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and you know, the technology today, well, here's what I'm excited about automotive technology today.
Yeah.
Right. Is that I feel like we've left the era of widgets. Do you remember the era of widgets? Right.
Yeah.
You know, it started around like 2005, went all the way to like, you know, 2018 or so. It was just like, and everybody had a widget for something. Right. But what these widgets ended up doing were actually generating new processes, not actually complementing existing process. And to your point, Ray, like you were saying earlier, is that process has to be measurable so that we can continue to optimize it. You know, I want to get your kind of take on, you know, how dealerships should be approaching technology today and what they should be kind of looking for that will, in a way, support process and people.
Yeah, that is a loaded question, but an important one, I think, right? And there's a variety of answers to it. So let me just say that mine's not 100% correct, the only one, I guess I should say. But technology is amazing. I mean, when I think about the technology that's in place today, if only I'd had that, right? When I was in sales or when I was a GM or when I was running, you know, sales ops for a group. I mean, my gosh, there is so much available to really allow a dealership to operate seamlessly and intelligently. And this is going back to the day that you may have worked on these too, Jason. I mean, we have cards, right? Little in a box. I mean, that was your follow-up card. I mean, there's no such thing as a CRM when I started, but I keep dating myself. That's probably not good, but anyhow, I've seen the evolution though. The technology is valuable. And what I really strongly believe in, and it's a hard thing to, I think, when you think about the control that goes into managing or dealing with change in a dealership, mm-hmm. There's so much control over, well, we can't impact our gross by a dollar, right? Negatively. Or the fear of impacting the gross negatively by a dollar. That there's a paralysis, I think, in adopting some of this amazing automation that, you know, do your homework, vet it, but really there's so much out there that can take these tasks away from what could be a sales manager in a dealership that really fosters growth and leads the team to achieve, you know, next level success versus a manager that gets stuck at the desk because they have so many duties they have to do. The technology could replace those duties and allow them to get out and do what they really should have been hired for, which is to lead that team and be hands-on with them and coach them and, you know, implement their wisdom with them and all of those things. But I think that there's a paralysis going on sometimes where we're looking at, you know, oh, the times are tough. We've gone from record high profits down to some, you know, challenging profits with all of the economic factors in this industry, which are, I mean, one thing about this industry from the time I started to, you know, probably about, I don't know, 6 years ago, it was so predictable, really. Right. I mean, if the economy crashed, then of course you had trouble with the automotive industry, but this has been such an there have been so many unprecedented things that have happened and unpredictable. I mean, completely unpredictable things that you would just be like, that never would have happened in automotive 10 years ago, you would have thought, right? And so when that happens, the paranoia to change your process, even if it sucks, right, is there for so many people. And I understand that. Or to invest in something, again, that your team may not use. But really, it all starts at the top. I mean, you have to decide what's going to help your dealership grow, get the buy-in from your team. And that's on a leader to get the buy-in. I mean, you can't just say, well, my team doesn't do the things that they're supposed to do. Well, then that's on you. It's not on their team, you know? You got to make the changes. You got to be involved enough to know what changes need to be made to make that happen. But putting in technology that will allow your staff to work smarter,
yes,
more efficiently, more effectively, and more seamlessly with customers, and utilizing the automation that's available to put their time better to use in other areas is so important. And it's all there today. It wasn't there 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
No. I mean, look, it really wasn't. And if it was, it was technology for the sake of being technology.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it was, you know, it's not like what it is today. You're 100% right. Like the level of automation and opportunities out there, you know, we should be able to take those documented processes on behalf of the dealership. And I would say, you know, look at automating, you know, 30% of, yes, you know, of those processes so that we're reallocated back that time so that we can continue to develop out better experiences, you know, for our customers. And, you know, that automation to me is like a safety net too. When set up correctly, you know, like, look, I would consider myself to be a great salesperson, amazing, yeah, at follow-up. Hell, man, there's still time I forget stuff.
Oh, you know, everyone, we're human. That's where automated technology helps, right? I mean,
100%. And then not only about automotive, but I mean, you have automation. I love what's coming out now from the data side of the industry and looking at things like predictive models. You know, like our industry has always, you know, has been kind of plagued with this, reactiveness in some cases, not always, you know, but there is just this kind of general reactiveness sometimes. And, you know, a lot of industries, a lot of other verticals don't accept that. And that's because they look at the data, they analyze the data, they predict things off that data. And I love the fact that our industry has really kind of got into that mode just in the last few years.
You know? Like it's, I love I'm so passionate about it. And it's so exciting to me. I think, you know, the data that dealerships have is so powerful. I mean, there's so much there, and most sadly haven't figured out what to do with it. And I think that, you know, the whole conversation about, I mean, data is the darling right now, right? And I think it's exciting. I mean, I think there was a time, I don't know, I'm dating myself again, you know, the Datium days where that was a fraction of what you could do today, but it was still a concept that was so new. And, you know, unproven, but very exciting when you think about what you could do with those concepts, right? And taking your data. And it was funny to me. I mean, I remember thinking at an early age when the only time we kind of really worked smart before, you know, there were even CRMs was if there was a recall,
Exactly.
Or if there was, you know, some kind of crazy incentive, it would be like, go through all of your records and find every customer that applies to this. And so my mind started thinking that way early on. And so when, you know, when I had the opportunity to be the leader or to have, you know, more technology to help support getting those nuggets of information, it wasn't just, like you said, in a reactive manner. It was, how can we create our own success and our own future and our own opportunities, not just wait for them to come to us or, you know, spend the traditional marketing dollars to do that.
Well, and look, I think that's what ultimately makes a good sales leader, right? I mean, if we kind of bring back to where we kind of originally, the umbrella topic that we had today, it was around sales leadership. You know, we've kind of covered people about, you know, people in general, and our EQ and our approach to people, how I need to get better, but still, that's fine. you know, we talked about the process, how important they are to be documented so that our team can be led, you know, by those processes. Look, guys, when anybody out there watching this right now, like if a process exists in your head, I can guarantee you, if you're supposedly leading a group of individuals right now, every single one of them have a different variation than what's in your head right now.
100%. And you got to keep those processes simple too. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I mean, most recently at Fuse, you'd walk into a dealership or you'd talk to a dealership and you'd say, tell me about your sales process. And two different people would tell you two different things on the same, you know, call or in the same meeting, right? And then if they did, you know, you would, whatever the answer was, you'd say, okay, well, let's back up then. Let's just kind of talk about it. We'll jot through the process and kind of, you know, get to an end product here that just high level summary. What's the first step, second step, third step? And then it ended up being countless steps. And you're like, this is complicated. This is too complicated for today. Maybe not, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever, but too complicated for today. And how do your people, like where are the biggest failure points in these processes, right? Because that's where we know we need to do some adjusting and curving. And what can we cut out? What doesn't have to be there anymore? What can we let technology do in this process now? So that then there's more people to have eyeballs on how the process is working and connecting, right?
Exactly.
And the baton then gets handed over seamlessly to whatever the next step or process or person is. I mean, it's the next step of the process or the next person. So no one's dropping it. And I think that, you know, it is often in people's head, and the only time it gets spoken is when a person on the team, unfortunately, is doing something that is against what that person thinks the process is, that it's in their head.
Exactly.
And that doesn't help anyone learn or grow. And they still don't know what's expected of them at the end of the day. They know what they're not supposed to do, but what is it that they're supposed to do to be considered successful? And that is the biggest challenge, I think, in many people's teams today, is that the people don't know what's expected of them because there's nothing written, there's nothing coached on, there's nothing enhanced or improved on, you know?
And look, and that kind of goes into our last topic for today perfectly well, because we're talking about the baton and how to hand it off. Yeah. And as we look, so far we've covered people, we've talked about process, we talked about how technology should be supporting those processes and help us better them either through data or automation. But look, when we kind of combine all three of these together and you have that baton handing, the team, the coach, like you said, right? Mm-hmm. This starts to create either intentionally or unintentionally this thing, this mystical thing we call in sales departments culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on how we can be more intentional in developing culture. Cause I think culture happens regardless if we're there or not.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it does. And you don't end up with a good culture by accident. So it's going to happen one way or the other. And so you might as well get involved in create and craft the culture that you want, right? So that everybody is feeling good instead of, you know, feeling when you're not leading and not having a process, a culture gets created. It's just not a good one. Does that make sense? So, and it doesn't help lend to the success that you're trying to achieve. So I think, you know, for me, again, early on, I knew that I knew that a positive work environment helps everyone, mm-hmm. You know, strive to be their best. So, you don't have to run around giving everybody kudos all day, every day, you know, or anything like that, but you certainly need to reinforce good behavior. You need to immediately address what would be negative or bad behavior. Because if you don't, then the folks that are doing the good behavior get really upset. And over time, they're not happy because, you know, they're working hard to do the best and the other person's getting away with whatever. But to summarize it all, I think that you have to establish the kind of environment and culture that you want. And that's with that, then you have to put key things in place to not just model it, but enforce it and encourage it.
100%. You have to give them a North Star, right? Like, you know, look, here at the end of the day, we all know what we do. All right. There's a 30-foot sign outside our building that says exactly what we do. Okay. We sell metal and we service metal, but why we do it the way we do it.
Yeah.
All right. And this is for any sales industry, any sales department out there. I don't care if you're a vendor or if you're a dealer listening to this, right? Why you do it the way you do it is that North Star. And if it's not mapped out, you know, to your point, Ray, everybody will find their own North Star. And, you know, the North Star is not always a positive thing. The first dealership I worked at, the North Star was very, very clear. Make as much money as humanly possible on every single person that came through the door. And we were damn good at it.
You were probably trained the same way I was. You befriend them, put your hand out. Hey, you know, welcome to John Eagle Motors. And then, you befriend them all the way through the process. Yes, yes, yes to everything. You get them in your office and then you turn on them, peel them off the ceiling. And I was like, I don't want to do that. You know, that's not like, I have to look myself in the mirror every day, so I can't do that. But that was, they're like, oh, young lady, you're going to do that. You know, it was kind of funny, but obviously I didn't do that. I mean, I got yelled at a lot for doing it my own way, but they found out that that worked. But it's going to be something. And it sounds like you and I started at maybe the same store. I don't know.
But you know what? You're right. If we're not intentional about it, it will happen. So anybody out there watching and listening, this is what me and Ray are just saying, okay? Yeah. Is that, you know, to be a good leader, you know, you got to be on top of your people. You got to be on top of your process. And you got to make sure that the technologies that you're investing in, and it is investment, okay? Yeah. The technology you're investing is not adding processes to your people, but is complementing the processes either through automation and data. And look, if you're not intentional, watch out. Culture will just happen completely on its own. You know, both you and Ray are saying the same thing here. We encourage you to go out, find your North Star. Hey, Ray, I know we're getting towards the tail end of our time, and I know we could easily just keep going here for at least
another. Going forever, yes.
But before I let you go, though, for everybody out there watching, listening right now, who's kind of enjoy this conversation, maybe like to pick up this conversation with you and kind of continue to go with it.
That would be fun.
What's the best way to connect with you?
Yes, I would say my phone or my email, either one. I don't know. Can I share those?
Absolutely. Yeah, we don't.
So my phone is 503-888-2959. Pretty easy number there. And then my email is just ray.selvey@gmail.com.
There we go. See, I love when people do that, by the way. They just got to throw it out there. Say, give me a call. You know?
Yeah, I love that. I love talking automotive. It's something that I think, you know, having done it as long as I have, and just, it's such an exciting industry. And I think we're all lucky to be in it, right? I mean, you can write your own ticket. You can, you know, be a young kid that didn't end up going to college or was trying to figure out what you were going to do until you went to college or saved enough money for it. And then you end up in this crazy industry where you make more money than all of your friends that, you know, got doctorates or whatever. And I think that, you know, it's a funny, funny industry. And it's also can be very messy. And I think that anything, when we talked about people, process, technology, culture, whatever it is, you know, the leaders really have to invest themselves into whatever it is that they're doing. If we're buying technology and putting it in place, you have to invest yourself in it to ensure that it's going to be successful. And you do that not just for the sake of yourself, but for the sake of your team, because everything that you do for your team, and everything that you do to improve your team's life, like moving just obstacles, I just always imagine, you know, doing this, moving obstacles, that makes their lives better. And that means that they're more excited to do their job every day, which ultimately pays off for you in the end, right? I mean, that's just a nice byproduct, but it feels better too, right?
It does. Yeah. And you know what? And hey, for everyone out there watching, listening, we really appreciate your time. I encourage you, make sure you guys reach out to Ray, connect with her. She's an amazing person. She loves talking. She just loves helping anybody and everybody. Ray, thank you so much for taking the time to jam with me today. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Jason. It was a pleasure. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Strategy with Jason podcast with your host, Jason Harris. Don't want to miss new content? Be sure to check out the full podcast library at strategywithjason.com to stay in the know. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Happy podcasting.